And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 772. We're talking prospects today. It's fantasy baseball prospects. Lots of young players have been called up this season. Maybe a few more. Looking at you, Pirates, could call some people up this season. We will see on that one. But I brought a friend of mine, friend of the show, onto the show today to maybe give some insights on what we can expect, because not all prospects are flourishing out the gate this season. So it's kind of more, should we be patient? Should we drop, hold, all that kind of fun stuff? In order to help me do this, you can find this wonderful individual over at PitcherList. He has his own Substack. He's on Twitter at m_ski22. Martin Sokolsky, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing good, Bubba. Thanks for having me. I'd probably be doing a lot better if the Red Sox weren't about to get swept by Scott Burks' Angels, but hey, whatever works.
Yes. It's at least a Joe Adell hit a home run, I guess. I'll put it that way. But yeah, it's a weird time in Red Sox world, I can only imagine, for you with, you know, they finally did call some of the prospects up. We will definitely talk about them later, but at the same time, the pitching staff's just a train wreck, injury-wise and whatnot. I can give you the floor. Do you have any thoughts on how things finish for the Red Sox this year? Is it just do you hope they sell, basically?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I don't see a point of – I mean, it'll be hard to move Trevor Story's contract, I think. But if they can eat some of the money, maybe use some of what they saved with Devers to eat some of that and get rid of that, maybe move Meyer over to shortstop, just let the kids play. There's not a – they don't have a lot of veteran talent on that team that they can truly move. But maybe Giolito, maybe Story, just – although if we trade Giolito, we might not have any pitching left at this point. Yeah. So, but, yeah, I prefer that they sell and just kind of build for 2026.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting. Like, I'm not going to go into the Devers situation here because that just shocked everybody, it felt like. But maybe not everybody. We'll see. But time will tell there, as he's got the groin injury and all the other drama built in there. I do want to ask you a couple tidbits of news here before we get into the prospect chatter. But before we do that, let everybody know about your Substack, about your written content, where they can find you, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so I'm writing quite a bit. I'm writing about four or five articles a month over at PitcherList. I'm doing prospects of the month. I'm doing a couple of divisional farm reports as well, in addition to my Dynasty 350. So quite busy over at PitcherList. Also doing my own Substack. It's Four Seam Fantasy. You can find the link to that off of my Twitter or my Blue Sky as well. A lot of content going on over there. I'm kind of on a hiatus because I'm going on vacation here in a couple of days, but generally putting out something at least every day, if not every other day. So,
yeah, you are putting out content left and right. It is awesome to see and crazy at the same time, my friend. Trust me, it's coming from me. Trust me, I get it. So, yeah, it's good to see. I'm glad you're taking vacation. Enjoy that while you can, especially this time of the year. A couple bits of news, like I said, we're going to talk about here. First, Corbin Carroll. I just want to get your thoughts. I'm kind of asking everybody. We're all in – a lot of us are in, like, wait mode right now to kind of get a final thoughts here. But he's got the chipped wrist, the fractured wrist that came out after a shocker. Real testing took place. And he's out for an undisclosed amount of time. What would it take for you to drop Corbin Carroll?
I need to know that he's going to be out, like, 8 to 12 weeks. I think is probably where I'm at. I guess 6 to 8 would put me in limbo. I think in a 12 team at that point, I would probably drop him. You just never know. At least it's not the Astros medical staff that's handling him at times. So that's good. Okay. But I got a feeling that if we get further information that says he's going to be out until early to mid August, at that point, you might as well just drop him, because by the time the season wraps up, if he's even back from rehab, he's going to have maybe a month, and you just never know how that wrist is going to react, especially when we've seen that having the ability to sap a lot of power. Just not a fan. It's unfortunate because he's having a great season.
Yeah, massive bummer on that one. Hopefully we get some news here sooner than later. They've kind of been mute on the situation for a little bit now with Corbin Carroll. It doesn't help that they have to worry about Adrian Suarez, Vargas, just Josh Naylor, who's back, but he's got to, like, the whole team is pretty beat up. Zach Neto of the Angels. So at least you have this to go with. Like, you might be sad about the Angels winning, but Scott Burks probably didn't sleep last night crying tears of Zach Neto leaving him. Zach Neto jammed his shoulder again, same shoulder he had surgery on, sliding into second base trying to steal a bag. In the ninth, he threw a ball that looked like it was full of, like, Vaseline, so just, like, floated out of his hand. He had nothing on it. left the game, had an MRI. Before today's game on Wednesday, as we record, still no news at the point of this recording right now. What's your thoughts on this? Because I do not feel great about a previously surgically repaired shoulder getting hurt again.
Yeah, that was my exact thought as well. You never want to see a recurring injury on the same body part, especially a shoulder, because we know how long it kept him out originally. I would imagine because they had a day game today that we'll get more information after the game, but it doesn't bode well for Neto. I would expect him to be out for quite some time. Maybe he's avoided injury and just got like a little stinger, but based on the history he's had with that shoulder, especially, I'm not optimistic at all.
Yep, I'm very, very skeptical on this one. Plus, it's an Angels team that why push it at this point in time? So there's a lot of questions, I guess, in play on this one. All right, a lot of the other news, we don't really have anything concrete over, like Lou Bob left Wednesday's game. Wyatt Langford's now going to get testing on his oblique. All this great stuff that just makes us thrilled to play fantasy baseball. Let's get to what you enjoy covering in fantasy baseball, and we enjoy spending tons of fab dollars on. And so far, not most of it has paid off. So let's talk prospects who, in the preseason, Martin, you and many others wrote up these guys. You still wrote them up during season, but you've been writing them up, pumping them up. Like, these guys are coming, so on and so forth. Well, we've got a little cup of coffee with most of them. Let's start with the man that took place. I can't even call him. Like, I feel like I'm calling boys because they're so young to me, but I feel bad. So the man that was called up by the Cincinnati Reds, made his season debut on Tuesday night, made the Yankees look foolish for a couple of innings, threw 5 innings, 3 runs, 8 Ks. That is Chase Burns, my friend. What should we expect from, or what are you expecting from Burns the rest of the way? The biggest question you mentioned in the Discord earlier today, what are the innings? Because that's my concern. Because he's going to get a ton of fab this week. Ton of fab. But is it going to be worth this question? So what's your thoughts on Chase Burns?
Yeah, I mean, Burns was pretty impressive. He had 12 whiffs on 81 pitches. Really looked the part of an elite pitching prospect. With that said, you know, obviously there are concerns about inning limits. It's kind of a weird situation because the Reds are 4.5 games out of the division and 2.5 out of the wild card. So they're right in the thick of things. They've got a couple of injuries to their rotation. We know Hunter Green's been out. I feel like it's going to be a similar path to what the Pirates did with Skeens last year. And also with the Pirates, or the Reds had this exact same path with Rhett Lauder as well. It was similar, you know, similar prospect, very different profiles. But the same concept. They were both an ace in college. They both had significant innings the year before they were drafted. Both sat out following the draft as well. So I think with Burns, his career high in innings is 100, which was last year at Wake. He's at 71 right now, including last night's start. Natural progression leads me to like the 130 range, which is actually shy of where Skeens was at, because I think Skeens finished at like 160 last year. So I think it's probably going to be comparable to a mix of what Lauder had, which is a 139, and what Skeens had at 160. But I think if you're going to get another 60-ish innings out of him, it's probably going to be quality innings with high strikeout rate, pretty good ratios. There's a great American small park factor that's in play, but his stuff is just so, so good. And I think he's going to be really good for a while, but I don't think he's going to help you in September, because I really think they're going to fall out of the race, especially with Green being out. So eventually they're going to shut him down.
That's a good call, because like when I was debating it throughout the day, because I do need some pitching help in certain leagues, and the strikeouts he can rack up could be game changers in theory. Like on Bubba and the Bloom on Tuesday, I compared it to some guys we'll talk about here soon that could be steal a ton of bags. Like, yeah, those are kind of the game changers you can get the final 3 weeks or 3 months of the season. And even if he's set to throw, let's say, 60 innings and he gets 12 starts, 5 innings a start, because maybe they monitor his innings, that's 12 starts. Most pitchers are still only getting 15 to 16 more starts by the rest of the way. So he's almost in, like you said, September, he falls short. He's going to probably hit the skids. But we're still going to get a good run with Chase Burns. So this is me trying to talk myself into bidding on him. But I was just trying to determine, is it worth it? And it feels like if we can get, you know, 10 to 12 starts, it's worth it. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I think if we look at something like a sub-3 ERA with around 100 strikeouts, I think that's a fair assessment from him, even as a rookie. I've seen a lot of Skeens comparisons already with him, and it's fair because they were both dominant in college, but at the same time, Skeens is, I don't know, he's just like one of one. I just don't I don't see anyone kind of on that level with him as far as collegiate pitchers going to the majors. But yeah, I think it's, if you've got fab dollars left, then obviously you're going to, you know, I would look at 30-40%, and honestly, that might not even be good enough based on your league settings and who's got money left. But he's worth a shot, and you just take your chances because he's better than the replacement level. So,
yeah, no, I'm with you. It's going to be really interesting to see those price tags come up, because everybody that listens to my stuff knows I'm not a heavy prospect spender, but I will be spending this week. Let's just see if it's enough will be the million-dollar question. Let's go to a player that I held on to in the one league I acquired, Chandler Simpson, this year. I know a lot of people said they were holding. Most did, not all did. We'll see where this lands again this weekend. But Chandler was called up on Monday. He's starting the first two games since he's been called back. We know who he is, Martin. He hits for a very good average, steals all the bases, has zero power. He went to AAA, hit like 340 or something, and stole a ton of bags again in a small sample. So he just kept doing what he was doing, basically. Where are you at on Chandler Simpson? Because I was kind of hinting at, you know, Burns can get all the strikeouts to be a game changer. Simpson could legit steal 30-plus bags the rest of the way, and no one would be shocked at all if he did that. Like, I'm probably underselling what he can do. So where are you at here on Chandler Simpson? Because to me, it feels like if they brought him back this quickly, they're kind of invested now. If like that's what I'm thinking. It could be totally wrong.
No, I think you're right. I mean, if you look at the fact that, you know, you probably have around 3.5 months left of the season. He stole 19 bases in what, like 125 at bats, which is just absurd. So, I mean, we're talking, he could steal 50. He probably will steal 50, to be honest with you, if he plays every day, which I think he will. If you can take Simpson for what he is and not expect more, then you'll be very happy with the results. You know, you're going to get the bags. You know, you're going to get a pretty good average. You're going to have a lot of steals for sure. He's going to have a decent on base rate. If you're not expecting anything more than just the steals and a little bit of average, he's perfect for what you're looking for.
Yeah, I'm there with you. Again, I was kind of against spending up for him earlier on, but I'm going to keep saying it throughout this show with a lot of these guys. I think the second chances or just what the players have to offer, you can see what your teams are lacking. If you're lacking steals, there you go, guys. It's like, this is a game changer at the position. Just make sure you have power, of course. All right, let's head to your backyard. Roman Anthony. I know how excited you are just seeing you interact daily in the Discord. So I know you're pumped on when he got called up. He had nothing left to prove in the minor leagues. That was just silly at that point. But it's a slow start. This is going to be a very, very popular theme throughout most of these players. Slow starts. He enters Wednesday at 114, one homer, one steal. Had the day off on Wednesday. Play discipline is not bad, though, for a young ball player. When I saw him on Saturday in San Francisco, he like didn't have the greatest game, but he made some loud contact. Like, there was some, you know, he hit one to the gap, got caught like right in front of the wall and stuff. Like, he looked good. So I'm not overly concerned. Doubt you are. What should we expect in the second half from Roman Anthony?
Yeah, I think he's settling in is the big thing. I don't care about the small sample size so far. What I've seen from Roman is he's been everything that's been advertised. It's loud contact. It's a lot of barrels. It's a lot of bat speed. His plate discipline is incredible. He doesn't chase. His strikeout rate is a little higher, but I think he's being a little passive right now. But he's walking at a 17% clip early on. There's just so much to like, and he's going to play every day. There's no reason they called him up. B, there's no reason that they traded Devers. And there's no reason for them to set him down, is what I'm getting at. They've made space. They've made it clear that this is the path they're going to take. He's the guy in the organization. Beyond Garrett Crochet, Roman's 1-1. You know, like, he's not going anywhere. They're going to play him. He's going to figure things out. I think when it's all said and done, we're going to look at, he's going to have a really good second half. I think he's still adjusting to the league. I think we're looking at maybe 10 to 12 homers, 260 or more, you know, batting average, high on base rate. He's not going to run a lot, but he's just going to be a steady bat. And maybe 2025 isn't the year that you really want to own Anthony in redraft. But I promise you, by 2026, 2027, this guy is going to be a top two-round pick, and I'm really, really excited about it.
Good to hear. I would be, too, if I was a Boston Red Sox fan. a stick in Boston. Marcelo Meyer, he got called up a couple weeks before Roman Anthony, and he was, you know, hitting just fine in the minors as well. There's a theme with these guys. Very good. Hitting 216, four homers, no steals since he's called up, striking out 31% of the time, which is kind of more in line with what I expect from young ball players trying to figure things out. That's why Roman is kind of a nice little trend there. Where are we at on Marcelo Meyer, a guy that has been sitting, I wouldn't say every time versus lefties, but it seems like at least 50% of the time versus lefties. So where should we sit on him going forward?
Yeah, I think that Meyer is going to be a guy that's going to be the opposite of Anthony. I think Meyer's going to sit, like you said, quite a bit against left-handed pitching. He didn't really have the track record against lefties that Anthony did. He had a 760 OPS earlier this year against lefties and a sub-700 last year. What he brings is the defensive stability that they really need in that infield. I don't know where he's going to play when Bregman's comes back is my question. Do they move Story and move Meyer to shortstop, his natural position? It's a possibility. Do they move him to second base? Maybe they move Story back to second base. We've seen him play there as well. But then you've got the Campbell effect, who we'll get to in a little bit. I think defensively, he's good enough to stick. I think the bat has been better than I anticipated. The power is pretty decent. He's got four homers on five barrels with a pretty good hard hit rate as well. So I think that of the two, Anthony's got is more likely to have the staying power. But I think Meyer provides a little bit of the defensive stability that the Red Sox are looking for, and it's probably going to lead to him having more playing time.
So. Yeah, that would be nice. I think to your point at the beginning when we talked about selling, I hope all of these guys just pretty much just play. I shout that from the rooftops most of the time for many prospects. I get annoyed when they start sitting them and then expect them to like the Jordan Lawler thing, which I actually forgot to put him on the outline, I think. Like, that's just annoying all around. Like, the guy has talent, and they never want to play. Yeah, so I digress on that. And it feels like Meyer's kind of going on that pattern right now, and they need to figure out, like, hey, should we play him or not? Because not playing him and just sitting him is a gigantic waste. Sorry. Like, Shea Whitcomb, you know, thanks for calling him up, Astros. Great stuff there. Sorry. No, nothing to worry about there. Last one for the Red Sox, Christian Campbell. This is one where draft season, he was great. Actually made the team, most people know. Started out hitting really well, and then I don't know if it was trying to play him in a million positions or what took place, but ended up hitting 223, six homers, two steals. He's in AAA now to get, I just call it a timeout to get his mind right. We'll see how that goes. What are you expecting from Christian Campbell going forward? Because some people might have dropped him, and this could be a guy that gets called up, you know, a couple weeks, and we're back at it again.
Yeah, Campbell's tricky. So for the backstory on Campbell, obviously he was kind of an unsung hero. He wasn't an Anthony or a Meyer that was a first round pick that, you know, immediately went to the top of the prospect charts with the Red Sox. He was a fourth round pick. He had a meteoric rise last year. He went from basically out, you know, with just barely inside their top 30 to their arguably their second best prospect, maybe third best prospect, depending on how you look at it. So I think that when you factor in that part of it, it's understandable that he would start to struggle eventually. These are major league pitchers. They're going to adjust to these kids. They didn't have a book on him, you know, before the season started, and it shows now. The strikeouts started to pile up. He only had 600 at-bats in the minor leagues. That's not a lot. That's a season's worth if you're lucky. I think he's going to be fine long-term. I think if there's anything that's going to give him an edge to come up again sooner than later, it's going to be the money aspect. They gave him that extension right before the season started. You know, they're paying him to play every day, and they're going to have to find room for all three of these guys. I mean, we know that their outfield's crowded. Their infield's kind of wonky right now as well. So they're going to have to make space. I think he'll be up sooner than later, but I still think it's something post All-Star break. Once he's had a good month to reset himself and get figured out in the minors. And I actually saw today that he started first base for the first time today at AAA. So maybe that's the path that they're going to take as well. They don't have a logical option there right now. As much as I love Toro, he's not going to play. So shout out Ryan Bloomfield on that one. But yeah, it's Campbell will be back at some point. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, but you kind of hit on it. I was like, I wonder if they actually commit full time to this first base thing and change into that, because obviously that seems to fit if Meyer's out there already and Story's out there already and Bregman comes back out around the All-Star break. There's not a lot of room for Christian Campbell to make work because the outfield's pretty packed as well on this situation.
I just feel like first base is a waste of his athleticism, though.
That's kind of what I was wondering, looking at him.
Yeah, he's played second. He's played outfield. He's super athletic, but at the same time, where are you going to play him in the outfield? You know, so
yeah, it's almost like this would be the total just middle finger in the air. If Bregman comes back, goes, I'll play first base. Let Campbell go to third, like that, because he's
beautiful.
Bregman keeps saying he'll do whatever the team needs. Well, it's like, okay, here you go. You want to go to first base? Because the last third baseman we had wouldn't do it. Would you like to do it, please? So that would be just icing on the cake for the season.
Absolutely.
All right, let's head to the Royals here, where Ryan's guy, Jack Caglione. Okay, you can tell me, is it Caglione or Caglione?
I pronounce it Caglione or Caglione. But
okay. I just want to make sure because I screw everything up. So my pronunciations. So Jack Caglione, this was one of the big time power hypes. 322 average, 15 homers over 50 games at AAA, or between AA and AAA, I should say. He's already got two home runs, hitting 194, but the strikeout rate's still totally fine in my books. You look at the quality of contact metrics; he's still crushing baseballs out there. The Royals are playing him pretty much every single day. Where should we be sitting on Jack? Because he cost a pretty penny a few weeks ago, but I think, you know, brighter days are ahead.
Oh yeah, he's here for good. There's no question that he's here for good. You can't find me five better hitters in the organization, let alone nine, that they can't get him to play every day. And he's already moved to the outfield, which is, you know, a plus because their outfield's not great. So yeah, everything you mentioned about the quality of contact, he's going to have elite, you know, quality contact metrics, barrel rates, hard hit rates. The power is legitimate. I'm actually almost more impressed with the contact rates because the book on Cags coming into the season was that in zone, he was going to make you pay, but out of zone, he wasn't going to hit anything. His overall contact rate is 78%. That's really high. And it's a small sample, but he was doing that in the minors as well. So whatever the book is, you know, that was in place before the season started, I think we can kind of throw that out and look at what we've seen in the sample so far between levels. He's a really good hitter, and he's going to be just fine. And the other thing too that I'm interested to see is his ground ball rate is like really, really elevated versus where it was in the minors. And granted, you know, that comes with facing quality pitching, better breaking pitches and things like that. Eventually he's going to lift the ball even more. And those power numbers are just going to take off. So I'm a big Cags fan. I've got him in several dynasty leagues, which makes me completely giddy. So I really love Cags a lot. And I think everyone that's watched him play is really entertained by what he's doing. So,
yeah, I love Cags. He's made some good defensive plays as well, which I didn't think the big man could, you know, pull out of his back pocket there. But kind of like what you mentioned and I was saying is, just the way he's making contact and the quality of that contact, I have zero concerns about him right now. I think he's going to figure it out, and he's going to turn into a player we're going to talk about later that will be compared to each other all season long in that left-handed power-hitting department. Let's go to the Chicago White Sox, Kyle Teal. This is one that I know you and I talked in Arizona. We've talked in Discord. I think we even talked about him in the pod on the preseason you were on, and I was with you, and you weren't alone. There's other prospect guys that I've talked to and listened to that were on the same page that Teal's like a maybe September a year away. Like, there was no rush for Teal. Well, then Edgar Caro gets called up pretty early. We're like, okay, interesting. And then all of a sudden, Kyle Teal's already called up. So that was a quick rise to the bigs for Teal. He's hitting 282 after today's games on Wednesday. Still does not have a home run yet. Has one stolen base in his small sample, 49 plate appearances. Saw a lot of power and speed last year in the minors in the Boston system. Worth the price, though, because Crochet came to town, so we can't get mad about that. Where are we at on Kyle Teal going forward? And if you want to kind of – I didn't put him on the list, but if you want to kind of compare him, Edgar Caro, going for this season at least, how he'd approach that, go for it.
Yeah, so it's funny that you mentioned Crochet, because ultimately the Crochet trade sped up the entire timeline for Teal. I think if he was still in the Red Sox organization, I think he would still be in the minor leagues. And actually, I'm confident of that because Connor Wong, while he's down this year, is a pretty solid defensive catcher. And Narvaez has come out of nowhere to be incredible. So back to Teal, really well-rounded hitter, really solid athlete. Defensively, I think he's better than Caro. I think the difference right now is just that Caro's got more reps in the minors, more feel for hitting. Long term, Teal's the guy, in my opinion. Caro's not a better player than Teal is, as far as what he can bring to an organization. And for fantasy purposes, Teal is definitely the guy you want to have as well. I think that right now with Teal, my biggest concern is the contact rates. They haven't been great. He's not had a lot of experience in the minors, like I mentioned, less than 500 at bats. So in time, he's going to be fine. I think he'll overtake Caro by the end of the season. Right now, I think it's going to be a 60-40, maybe even a 70-30 Caro split. But again, Caro is not great defensively, fine offensively, but not great defensively. And I think that's where Teal's going to take over the position. So
it's a good real life problem for the White Sox to have for us. Pain in the butt, massive pain in the butt. So maybe we'll see how it shakes out come spring training next year situation. Or yeah, maybe one of them learns how to play first base. We'll see. Sticking with the White Sox, Chase Mydroth. This is one that's, it's probably better real life than fantasy unless you're in a deep, deep league, because he's hitting 264. He scored 25 runs. He stole 9 bags. These are all good. He has zero power. He has 2 home runs. So I guess not zero, but he's got 2 home runs. So a very good player, but should we expect anything, I guess, fantasy relevant from him the rest of the way?
I don't think so. I think he's going to play every day because it's the White Sox, and he's been playing almost every day. So I think that he's going to stick in the lineup for a while. Fantasy-wise, I think, you know, if you're desperate for like a middle infield spot in like a 15-team league, or if, you know, injury attrition just takes everybody else out, I think he's got a little bit of viability. He's going to hit for average. He's going to steal some bags, which is kind of funny because he's not a burner by any means, but somehow he's making it work because he's really intelligent player. He really gets the most out of his talent. It's kind of like what you would see out of Matt Shaw. He's like the Timu version of Matt Shaw. It's like really cerebral, really good contact skills. But he's got zero power, like you mentioned. He's not much different than Simpson in that regard. A lot of contact, no power whatsoever, but he's going to get on base. He's going to hit for average. He's just not going to run like Simpson does. So I think long-term, Mydroth is probably just a utility guy. He might stick as a starter for a couple years there, but there's not a lot of juice with Mydroth. So
makes a ton of sense. Let's go to one of my favorite players in the preseason. Got some DC shares. I've written about him way too much for playing time tomorrow this season. Finally got the call, though, in Christian Moore, Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Played AA and AAA this year. Was raking at AAA before he got the call on that. He's already got 3 home runs, only hitting 194. 2 of the home runs came last night, including a walk-off. There's growing pains here, I would say, but I'm biased on this as well, so your input's going to be tremendous on this. Where are you at on Christian Moore? Because this is an Angels team that needs consistent people to play because of their health issues, but is Moore a guy that will be that second baseman for the rest of the season?
Oh, yeah, he's locked in for sure. I think, honestly, if he didn't tear his meniscus last year, he probably was already up last year, just knowing the Angels and their track record of getting prospects to the big leagues as soon as possible. It was also odd that he went to AAA because that's totally not their MO at all. But, yeah, of course, he dominated there as well, so that's good. But, yeah, I mean, obviously he had a double dong against the Red Sox last night, which you don't love to see unless you're a Moore owner, which I am. But I think that with Moore, he really, if you look at his track record in college, he really struggled with contact prior to the breakout season he had last year in 24. He really had a big strikeout problem. And then all of a sudden, it's like a light, you know, turned on and he started making really consistent contact. He was fighting the barrel and it all came out. The power came out. The speed has always been there. He's highly athletic as well, just like Campbell is. So I think that he's, you know, he's their long-term second baseman of the future without a doubt. For fantasy purposes for the rest of the year, you're going to get I think he's got potential to get to 15 homers this year, so long as he's making enough contact. At the same time, he's got that vibe where if for some reason he starts to get banged up or gets into a prolonged slump, they may send him down just to save face on it. But as long as he's healthy and he's going to play every day. And I think, again, middle infield option, possibly a desperation play at second base. But I think he's going to be pretty streaky, you know, for the rest. But he's going to lock in starting next year, and he's going to be a really good player.
I'm with you. I love what we saw at Tennessee. I was telling Ryan, like, off air last night, potentially, when I remember turning on the World Series last year. I'm like, who's this guy leading off? And the first at bat, he goes deep. I'm like, okay, he's good. Gets good. Yeah. No wonder he's a first-round pick. And then, playing golf with Prepish in Arizona, I couldn't hear too much about Christian Moore and the expectations there. So I was I bought in, and I'm hoping we have big things to come. Cam Smith, similar to Christian Campbell, made the team out of camp. A lot of hype this offseason. The Astros have stuck with him. I thought he'd be in AAA by now, like for a pretty good stretch, to be honest. But a roller coaster that seems to be getting better of late, but we shall see. Where are you at on Cam Smith?
Yeah, I'm a big Smith fan. I think the strikeouts are a little bit scary at the 26%, but all honesty, he's been highly passive compared to what his profile was. He had the slow start, like you mentioned, and they did stick with him, and credit to them for doing that. But, you know, he hit 307 in May. He's hitting 278 in June. Like, that's fine. 266, five homers, three bags. I'm okay with it. And the other thing to remember, too, about Smith is kind of like the Jackson Merrill thing. He switched positions. He wasn't really an outfielder. He was a third baseman. And he went to the outfield out of necessity because they had already acquired Paredes in the same exact trade. And so he moved to the outfield, and he's got to learn that position on the fly, just like Merrill did last year. He's not Jackson Merrill. The skill set isn't the same, but it's the same principle, right? And so I think with Smith, he's going to play. The Astros don't have a lot in the outfield. Chaz McCormick is basically on the witness protection list. Jake Myers will eventually come back down to earth. Yordan is nowhere to be found, you know. It's just Smith's going to play a lot, and I think he's going to be really good. I think he's going to be steady. He's not going to jump off the page with the stats, but he's a guy that you could plug in as a fifth outfielder that's going to hit for average. He's going to run into some power, you know, in time. I think he's going to be just fine.
I love the fact they've stuck with him. I kind of said it earlier, but a lot of these teams don't stick with these young players through thick and thin to let them get those at-bats at the big league level. And maybe it's because they didn't have a choice in Houston at the time, but it seems, like I said, be working out that by the end of the season, they might have a very quality outfielder for years to come in that situation.
Yeah, if he can get hot, I've got a AL Rookie of the Year prop with him and the Diamondbacks win total that I'd love to cash in at some point. So
that'd be sweet. That'd be real sweet. So I made a comment earlier about Jack Caglione being compared to another power-hitting left-handed prospect this season, and I cannot think if anybody else to compare him to than Nick Kurtz everywhere we go, because Kurtz struggled out the gate. Kurtz had the hype coming out of the minor leagues as he hit everything a mile. Kurtz is starting to figure things out, boys and girls. He's still only hitting 240 on the season. He's got 10 home runs since June 1st, since he came back from the IL, I should say, crushing everything. Where are you at on Nick Kurtz the rest of the way?
Yeah, he's a big-time impact bat. It's kind of the same principle that we talked about with Simpson and with Mydroth. If you can take Kurtz for what he is, then you're going to be just fine. He's going to strike out a lot. The contact rates were okay in the minor leagues, but he's just such a good hitter when he gets the ball in the zone. Obviously he made it to the big leagues for a reason, but he's got 10 home runs and 150 at-bats. He's playing in a really favorable hitting environment. The lineup is pretty solid, but he was arguably the best hitter in the entire 2024 class, and that includes Kags, that includes Travis Bezzana, that includes Cam Smith, that includes Christian Moore. That's high praise. I think when I really looked at some of the stuff that Kurtz is doing, and I almost want to compare him to Kyle Schwarber. Like, it's similar in that he's going to strike out a lot. He's going to hit for a low average. But he's got power that he could hit 50 home runs in the future. It's within reason. And it's a similar player in that regard. He's also freakishly athletic for a big guy. I watched him play in the AFL, and he's incredibly quick, in my opinion. I don't think he's going to steal any bags, but he runs really well. And I think Nick Kurtz is really special.
I'm with you. If you had to pick him or Caglione for the rest of the season for fantasy, which one would you prefer?
I'm taking Kurtz, and it's because of the power that we've already seen come to fruition. He's already got 10 bombs. I think he's realistically going to push for 25 if he plays every day. I like Cag's contact skills a lot better right now, which is odd because I wouldn't have thought that coming into the season. But I'll take Kurtz for sure.
Yeah, and let's not forget that ballpark Kurtz gets to play in. That's a beautiful situation as well. Let's go to Kurt's teammate here. I call him Maximus Muncy, to not get confused with Max, new optical Muncy in L.A. But the A's third baseman for now, Max Muncy, he's hitting 197, five homers, one steal. It's been better the second time through, which is nice. We've seen really good skills throughout the minors. Should we be buying this second trip through version of Muncy, or should we be concerned still?
Yeah, I'm not buying it. I don't think there's not enough in the metrics that get me excited. It's important to remember that he played in AAA and the PCL, which is notoriously hitter friendly. He's a good athlete. You know, he runs pretty well, but there's not a lot of oomph in fantasy. There's no carrying tool, really. He's not hitting for average right now. He's not getting on base. He's got the five homers, but that's all been, you know, recent. I think he just got into a hot streak where he just, you know, was mashing a little bit. But we've not seen the contact skills that I think it's going to take for him to stick. His strikeout rate in the minors is not great. It's around 30%. There's just not a lot there for me. And also, he's not really a great defender either. So there's not really anything that's going to keep him on the field. We know that Geloff eventually will be back. We know that Jacob Wilson's locked and loaded at short. I mean, I just don't see anything there to like really with Muncy.
Totally understandable. He's a tough one to crack for me. It's like there's been so many pluses and minuses with him that consistency is definitely lacking to get a good vibe for me. Let's go to the National League. I kind of tried to group these within divisions running down the charts here. Let's talk about Uncle Ted's favorite, one of his favorite young pitchers, Didier. I call him Didier. It could be Diddlier, Diddly. There's a lot of ways to go about this. Fuentes of the Atlanta Braves just turned 20 over the past like week. Made his debut this past week against the Marlins. Five innings, four earned, one walk, three Ks. So not great, not bad by any means. He started the year at high A, one start at AAA, kind of the Chris Burns path, or Chase Burns, sorry, path, but 48 Ks and 39 innings, tons of runs allowed, though. Where are you at on Fuentes? Because with Chris, I thought nothing of him, but with Chris Sale out now, they might need a pitcher for a little while.
Yeah, I found it really odd. I can honestly say when I saw that he was called up, I my jaw hit the floor. I mean, he's only 20 years old. He's only got 185 innings in the minors. His maximum innings that he's tossed, his career high was 75 last year. He's so young and he's so raw. I don't think he's going to be up for long. I think this speaks more about the struggles of Hurst and Waldrop than it does anything about Fuentes. I think Fuentes is very good. I think his floor is going to be high. He's not going to walk a lot of guys. He's going to miss bats. I'm not worried about the minor league stats in the sense of runs allowed and all that stuff. I'm not worried about it. He throws a lot of strikes. He doesn't walk a lot of guys. He's got really good stuff, especially for 20. I mean, he's 20 years old. That's pretty impressive. You don't see a lot of guys in the majors that are 20 years old that are on the mound. So I don't think he'll be up for long, like I said. But again, I think it speaks to more of the rotation depth or the positional depth in the minors for the Braves. Hurston Waldrop is a first-round pick from 2023. He's been awful. Smith-Shawver got hurt, which is really unfortunate. I just don't see a path where Fuentes stays up for long. If he does, I think he's going to be kind of what we would see out of a guy that we're going to talk about later, which is Logan Henderson and Andrew Painter. I think they're going to be multi-inning relief guys, if anything. But I would be shocked if he's up for much longer.
Good to hear, because that's kind of where I was off of it. And like I said, the Chris Sale thing, the Braves just can't keep pitchers healthy, at least they're young pitchers. Maybe they make a trade. Who knows?
Yeah, I think they're more likely to make a trade than anything.
Yeah, that would make sense. So we'll see where that one goes. So Uncle Ted, sorry. Let's go to the Miami Marlins here. The Goose, Augustin Ramirez. It's been a mixed bag here. He's hitting .233. Thought it'd be better, but 11 homers, one steal over 53 games, which has been pretty good. The plate discipline to me is very good. And the quality of contract's outstanding. Like, he technically, if you believe in X stats, should be better than he is right now. So love what we're seeing in that regard. And they seem to want to play him as much as possible. So where are you at on the Goose for the rest of the season?
Yeah, one of my favorite things that happens in the Discord, which everybody should be part of if they're not already, the Bubba and the Bloom Patreon in the Discord, you've got to be in there, you're missing out, is the Goose Bomb that when it comes up, or everybody just yells Goose with all caps, makes me really happy. But yeah, Ramirez is he's a guy that kind of was like I want to call him a late bloomer because he wasn't a late bloomer, but he broke out deeper into his minor league career than most guys typically do. He broke out in 23 and kind of carried it over to 24. Yeah, I'm a little disappointed with the batting average as well, but I was looking at some stuff. He's got a .236 BABIP, which is just incredibly low. Granted, his ground ball rate's a little higher than normal, but it's only 48%. I don't think that's egregious by any means. He's hitting the ball hard. The power looks really good. His plate discipline metrics look really good. Take advantage of him as a catcher now, because he is a horrific defender. It's like he's like the Noah Syndergaard of catchers. If he starts, start your base stealers, because he's going to give up a lot of steals. He's going to first base very soon, if not tomorrow. Like, he's really bad defensively. But offensively, he's going to be a really good hitter for them, and he's going to play, like you said, every day. I like Goose. I think he's going to be just fine for the rest of the season. I've got him, I think, in my top 15 catchers for the rest of the season on my redraft ranking. So yeah, I'm a Goose guy. I've got him in a few places as well, which makes me really happy. So
yeah, no, I'm very happy where I was able to get him for sure. Especially with, like, you know, he came up with Caro and a bunch of these other, like Teal and all of them. They haven't quite really figured it out. So all these young catchers getting the call, and Goose seems to be the only one that's one of the only ones consistently putting it together. Let's go to Ronnie Mauricio of the New York Mets, a player we would have seen a year or so ago if he didn't have an ACL injury. It's been a slow go since he got called up. He was raking at AAA before he got the call. Vientos goes down, so now Beatty's been playing third pretty much every day. Mauricio goes to second. Angel Acuna is now down as well, so maybe that helps Mauricio out. There's a lot of moving parts here, obviously. Vientos is expected back on Thursday, so this could all shift. Basic question, though. If we get Mauricio to stick around, what should we expect? Should we be excited about him for fantasy?
That's a tough question. I think when he originally debuted, I was really excited. He looked like he could stick. That ACL injury was kind of, not only was it unfortunate timing, but it kind of made me pause, because he really hasn't, in my opinion, really hasn't looked the same since then. I've watched a lot of his minor league at bats and game tape since he's come back from the injury. He doesn't have that same explosiveness, and maybe that's just because he's coming off the injury and it just hasn't settled. If you remember back at the AFL, he had a lot of hype as a guy that was going in DCs late, because people thought he was going to be up right away, but he had a setback in, I think it was in like December, with the ACL. So I don't think he's 100%. But I think as long as Vientos is out, he's going to play. Obviously, you mentioned Acuna going down. I don't think Acuna is not like the other. Let's put it that way. But there's power and speed potential with Mauricio. I think his contact skills are generally pretty good as well. I'm just not loving what I've seen so far. And maybe it's just him shaking off the rust still. And maybe he gets hot in the second half. I'm cautious on him. If he's available in your league, I wouldn't go out and add him for a high dollar amount. But he might be a guy that you could stash for a buck, and maybe he breaks out in the second half and becomes a star. So.
Yeah, no, I'm very intrigued by him, because the skill set was so good before that injury. And then, like you said, it kind of got slow played coming back. Heck, I think when people thought he was kind of be the next big thing, it was even before Lindor was there. Like, so he was the shortstop of the future. Obviously, that has shifted. That's why he's playing second base now, so on and so forth. So we've been waiting for this hype train for quite some time. Speaking of a train, we're not going to call it a hype train because it is in full speed ahead. There's no hype. This guy is a beast. Oh, yeah. We are recording on Wednesday for those that are under a rock here. The Skeens-Mizorowski duel is fun. And Jacob was outstanding once again. He's allowed, I think, one hit in his first three starts, which is pretty impressive to go with. Let's see, 19 strikeouts and 16 innings pitched. Where are you at for Jacob Mizorowski?
Bubba, this one hurt. As soon as I saw it on the rundown, I was like, I am done. I'm cooked here. I'm eating like Costco-sized portions of crow with Mizorowski. I thought he was going to be a reliever. I thought he was going to walk the world. This guy has been insanely good, like insanely good. 30% strikeout rate, 10% walk rate is what it is. That's what he is. He's going to be inconsistent with command at times, but the arsenal has been so electric, so good. And I think the logical question is, when does he break down, right? He's 6'7", 200. It's a pretty decent frame. He's not paper thin like Chris Sale. He's not as muscular as Paul Skeens. He's like right in between. So he's been throwing 100 since he came up like in the minors. So he's done it. He's never had any extended issues, knock on wood. This train is going to continue to go off the rails. At the same time, I'm still cautious about the command. I still think it's not great. Maybe it rears its head again. Maybe he becomes like a young Dylan Cease in the short term where we get the high strikeout rates, but then we get games where he walks six guys. But right now, he's otherworldly, and I'm really impressed. And I'm eating crow, and it's hard.
Yeah, and the thing is, you weren't alone in that one. Oh, no. Even if you look at his regular stats, it's like, okay, yeah, he's going to be awesome. There's control concerns, so on and so forth. And maybe they still, like, he's had a three-start run from the gods. So we'll have to wait and see there. Just for fun, Mizorowski or Burns rest of the way?
I'm going to go Mizorowski, and it's only because of innings. I think on a apples to apples, I think the strikeouts will be similar. I think that based on his usage and the Brewers' need to have him in the rotation, I think he's going to stay and get more innings than Burns will. So if you're going to give me the higher innings volume, I'll take it. But I'm so cautious still. I don't want to take a victory lap and say that I was right when he starts to fall apart a little bit. The track record is the track record. And I don't know. Right now he's dominating, and I'm prepared to just be humbled, and I'm completely fine with that. Just be cautious. It's my only thing. Just be cautious.
Because with all these young guys, like, there's going to be hiccups for sure. And when most of them turn to be very large hiccups when those take place.
He's coming out looking like Strasburg did. Like, he's coming out with that type of...
It's a good comp.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a very good comp. Let's go to the Dodgers here, because Dave Roberts is the most trustworthy manager on the face of the planet. It was less than a week ago, it feels like, where he said Haesung Kim earned the right for more playing time. And then I was getting ready for bed, and he gets pinch hit for by Enrique Hernandez, and I just laughed, tweeted it out. Funny. Since then, over the last six Dodgers games, Kim's only played twice. So he's really earned that role. Should we even be invested in this man in fantasy right now?
No, I hit him in my do a weekly fab column as well. Mine comes out on Saturday mornings on my Substack. So if you want to take a peek at that, you're more than welcome to. I've had Kim on my drop list, I think, the last 2 weeks, because he's still 50% owned in 12 teamers, which is just bonkers to me. I think I like him, but he doesn't play enough. And you need him to play, because when he's good, 372, two homers, six bags. I mean, his BABIP is really high because he's hitting a lot of ground balls and he's having luck with it, but he's just not playing. And there's no value for me if you're not going to play. And especially in that lineup, even if he's playing 4 days a week, give me all the Haesung Kim. I'll put him at second base. I'll put him in my middle infield spot. I'll even put him at utility if he's going to play every day. He's just not playing.
Yeah, I'm with you. I picked him up in a 15 this last week for like super cheap, thinking maybe Dave Roberts tells the truth. I know better. Shame on me. But I was just like, okay, he's cheap. Like he's got yeah. like, it's everything you're saying. But at a 12, I could never stomach that right now at all.
Yeah, we don't even have enough sample to get decent batted ball data on him. We don't have enough. We don't know if he's what he's going to be. Is he Masa Yoshida? Is he Jacob Wilson? Is he, you know, is he Luis Arraez? Like, what is he? We don't know.
If you're a Dodgers fan, he's God, but we haven't seen that yet. Yeah. Let's talk about a few. I kind of grouped these three pitchers together at the end. We'll talk about them separately, of course. You've already hinted on a couple of them, but it's one pitcher we've already seen, and for some reason he's still not in the bigs, and there's two others we have not seen, and for God, for those other reasons as well. Let's start with Logan Henderson. Dude was ridiculously good. Maybe not Miz good, but pretty darn close to Miz good. Allows four runs over 21 innings and four starts with 29 strikeouts to six walks. Absolutely filthy what Logan Henderson did at the big league level, but he needs to get right at Triple-A apparently. So you hinted, do you think he's just a long reliever for the postseason, or is it like, what's the deal here?
Yeah, the first note I made is the Brewers hate Logan Henderson. That's unfortunate because I think he's really good. And yes. If you look at his numbers, he's arguably better than Mizorowski by the numbers, only the numbers. Don't send me hate mail. If you do, send it to Ryan BHQ on Twitter.
Yes.
But his stuff grades out really well on our pitcherless PLV. Stuff Plus doesn't like him as much. I think it's probably because his breaking pitches just aren't relevant. But they do love him in Location Plus, which is huge. His Location Plus score is like 128, which is beyond elite. And he's doing it with two pitches, basically. It's just fastball, changeup, and they both have insane movement, like 20 inches of movement on each, 15% swing strikeout rate on each. It's just, I think they're just slow playing him, and I don't understand why, because he's been really good for the last few years in the minors. Maybe when they fall out of the race, if they fall out of the race, maybe he comes up at that point. But, I mean, they're two games back of the Cubs, which is impressive because the Cubs were really hot at one point. They're in the wild card hunt. I don't understand why they're not using him, but it's really frustrating for fantasy owners and really frustrating for prospects guys who've been waiting on him to come up for a while. So,
yeah, it's tilting, to say the least. What's maybe more tilting is the fact I've drafted Bubba Chandler in multiple leagues, and I'm not alone on this. And it's like, okay, I've done this long enough. I think I should probably just give up. But you've done it this long, so why am I giving up now? Stubborn things that I do in life. And Bubba Chandler actually hasn't pitched well of late. Maybe he's pissed off too. Maybe he's the O'Neill Cruz at AAA for the Pirates. Who knows? But where are we at on Bubba Chandler? Because this is just – I understood the Paul Skeens route. We're past that now.
Oh, yeah. We're way past that. I'm at the point now where I'm not even convinced he's going to come up. I mean – the Pirates are not contending at all. There's no reason to rush them at this point. They're 15 and a half games out of their division. They're probably, I'm not even looking at the number, but I'm sure they're at least double digits out in the wild card. They've got nothing to show for offensively. O'Neill Cruz is getting banged up now too, which doesn't help. I think he played today, but there's no reason to rush him. And like you said, he hasn't been great. His strike rate is 58% in the minor leagues. That's poor. That's really poor. And the command has just been not there. He's got 8 multi-walk games in the 15 starts he's had in the minors, including 2 games where he had at least 4 walks. He just hasn't – they say that development isn't linear. He just hasn't taken that next step forward like I thought he would take. He's still an elite pitching prospect, don't get me wrong. But based on his struggles and the fact that they're not competing, I don't see why they would bring him up. And if they do, it's going to be very, very limited innings. And I just don't think it's worth it. And I'm still holding him at 15s, and it's killing me.
Yeah, that's right. I might have him in 2 15s. I know that for a fact, and it sucks. And the fact that it's 15 makes it so much harder. Like 12s, yeah, you can move on from that one pretty easy. With 15s, it's like, well, we've done this long enough, but I'm starting to feel like you are. It's like, I don't know if he's ever coming up right now. This is really, really troublesome, to say the least. Andrew Painter, I know you and many others, is like the top pitching prospect coming into the season. Like, this is the dude we all want to see. Let's go painting. There's all the memes and gifs that you can think of involved here. Had a few setbacks, but it seems like we're ramping back up. We when he had the injury, we're like, okay, they were shooting for a mid-season-ish type go here. So where are we at on Andrew Painter?
Yeah, I think he's going to come up in the second half for sure. I don't know about the impact that he's going to have. I think that by the time he comes up, people are going to be down to 20% of the fab that they started the year with, if not lower. And I don't know that it's worth the investment because I don't think the innings are going to be there. I think their rotation is pretty locked and loaded. And, you know, Nola, even that's even with Nola out, they're still really locked and loaded in their rotation. He's only thrown, I think, like 48 innings this year, and he threw, I think, 15 in the AFL last year. So he's only 60 innings removed from Tommy John. They've been very cautious with him, and for good reason. I think he's still only 20, which is just absurd. Yeah, his stuff is legit. He's a future ace. There's no doubt about it. But I just don't see, unless there's a significant injury to a Zach Wheeler or, you know, Lizardo, or the wheels just fall off on Chris Sanchez, I just don't see a situation where he's a starter for them. Maybe a spot start here and there. But if he's going to come up, I think they're going to either use him in high leverage or that multi-inning relief role. There's just no point in trying to get him past his career high innings was like 103. They're not going to push him beyond that. I'd really be shocked. And I knew that was going to be the case coming in. I knew that wasn't going to be anything till the All-Star break. So I'm good with where Painter's at. Don't invest a lot in him unless he comes up tomorrow. Even then, I'm still really leery on that. So
no, makes a ton of sense. They want him for the future, not for the 2025 season. So
and they don't have any reason. They're starting the rotations really good.
Yeah, unless someone breaks down or something, they have no reason to get goofy with what's going on. Like even Mick Abel is doing enough to be serviceable for that team, and not saying he's bad by any means. I'm just saying like he's been quite serviceable, all things considered. Any other players we should keep in mind for the 2025 season? I know there's a ton of prospects. Most of them are just hype. Some might actually occur. I think I mentioned most that have been called up already, so you can go that route if you want. Or is there anybody left that we might see coming up that we should maybe hopefully have some fab money for?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really irritated with the Orioles as well because they're just terrible. And now that Adley's got the oblique, I don't see any reason to rush him back at all. He's not been good when he's been healthy. But I think that Samuel Basayo would be a logical name to throw out there. But the Orioles just, they said they don't want to call him up, which I don't understand. It's very frustrating. But if he gets called up anytime soon, he's an impact bat, similar to what Kurtz and Caglione are going to do. I think Uncle Ted mentioned in the chat, Jonah Tong. Yes, I could see him being up. I don't see an impact though, unless he gets up very soon. He's got really good stuff, but their rotation is, they're kind of in flux, I guess, with the stuff they've got going on there. But Jonah Tong is a name with the Mets that you could keep an eye on. Definitely Quinn Matthews with St. Louis. They're going to eventually need that arm because Michaelis is just terrible. They could bring Steven Matz out of the bullpen if they wanted to, but Matthews is finally working back up to, you know, stretching out from where he was at. He's injured earlier this year. That's a guy that I really had high hopes for before the season. So that's a guy I would expect to be up as well. Beyond that, I don't think there's anything overly impactful that we'll see. You might see the Padres get funky with Ethan Salas, but he's not fantasy relevant. So.
Don't tease me with a catcher blurb at the end. Come on now.
I had to.
I know. But I'm more of a Salas for 2026 campaign, I think, right about now. But we'll see how that one plays out. But all right, my friend, we will wrap it up there. Before we head out of here, remind everybody where they can find you. Oh, you got a ton of great work out there and social media, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so I'm on Blue Sky and Twitter. Blue Sky is at mski22. I'm not allowed to have the underscore there, but I am on Twitter. So Twitter is at m_ski22. You can find me over on the Dynasty team at Pitcher List. We're doing amazing things over there. If you're not looking at Pitcher List, you're really missing out, especially if you're looking for pitching data. There's nobody better. And then my Substack, I've got a daily column that I put out called the Four Bagger, which just recaps the four most important things that happened the day before in fantasy. Doing a lot of stuff with prospects. I've got a running redraft rankings list. I've got my Dynasty 350. So trying to get as much out. I'm trying to compete with the Bubbas of the world, but it's not working out so well. But yeah, and if you ever want to chat baseball with us, like I said, the Bubba and the Bloom Patreon and the Discord. There's so many smart people in there. There's so many people that are doing big things and main events and national contests. You got to get in there, and you got to get in there quick. So,
well, I appreciate the kind words. It is a ton of fun, but you are a big piece of that. So thanks for being a part of that. Thanks for joining me, my friend. We'll have to do it again sometime soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, everybody. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 772 with Martin Sikulski. Catch you all next time.